Welcome to the Business Transformation Podcast, which provides valuable insights and expertise on how to accelerate business optimization. Whether you're preparing to sell a company or have just acquired one and want to rapidly increase business performance and market valuation. My co-host is a gentleman by the name of Ian May. Ian possesses an extremely unique set of strategic business leadership skills and tactical experience. He has driven business optimization in various business verticals over the last 30 plus years, including private equity firms. Ian has led companies through the successful sales process after assuring costs and revenues were structured to maximize the sales price. His integrated leadership disciplines include finance, operations, manufacturing, and sales effectiveness. His practical approach for achieving business success is built on a diligent methodology that optimizes business transformation. My name is Ian Selby, your other co-host. I've been delivering high-performance sales services internationally for over 25 years. I have delivered my proven sales methodology to over 17,000 sales professionals around the globe. My clients range from well-known multinationals to smaller, more regional companies. Our clients witness a number of sustainable benefits from our services, which include increased customer loyalty, more effective hiring, and of course, increased revenues and margins. Prior to launching my business, I held sales and leadership roles with Apple from 1984 to 1994. In 1990, I was fortunate to have Apple recognize me as their top salesperson in the world. Over the last 20 years, Ian May and I have collaborated in transitioning several businesses successfully. These companies include Domtar, Hemlock Printers, Lithotech, Medica, Trojan Litho, and Storeflex.
Ian May, my co-host, it is truly a great pleasure to be with you here today, my friend.
Hi, Ian. How are you doing? And I'm looking forward to talking about something I'm very passionate about, obviously, which is maximizing the business performance through transformations.
Great to have you. And I can't wait to share with our listeners today your insights, your expertise, and your experience, and over 30 years of doing what you do so very, very well. Having transitioned so many businesses with you over the last 20 plus years, I've often heard you talk about some of the overarching objectives of business optimization. Can you tell our listeners a little bit today about what you mean about the phrase creating financial rewards?
Yeah, I certainly can. And it's important to note that in the business optimization world, there really is no silver bullet. You've heard me mention that several times, and creating financial rewards, there is no silver bullet. So there's a lot of things that need to be done, but it all the inputs and all the work leads towards improving the financial value of the organization. I mean, everybody wants to maximize the value of the organization, because there is always a time when there will be an exit, or when there will be a time when someone wants to value the business, whatever purchase, whether it be an M&A, et cetera, and also make sure it's on track with what you expected when you purchase a business. And, the common measure that everyone refers to in any business, in any sector of industries, is always EBITDA. That's the driver. Everybody's used to that. The financial companies, any investors, any backers, any valuation seems to be driven from the EBITDA. It's interesting that when you look, and I know we're going to talk in the upcoming weeks about all the inputs that drive the EBITDA, but there's two parts or components that end up with the value of the business. One is the multiple of the business, and that's the multiple of the EBITDA, and then there's the EBITDA itself. Now, they work in concert, so in some respects, you can spend your time working on your EBITDA, but if you do not grow the revenue level of the business, that is going to be basically underperform the maximization of value. Because there's always multiple times EBITDA is what the value is or the purchase price, et cetera. And so the more you grow a business on the top line, that's really important because that will move you into a different multiple level. So, and this is just an example. You may have a business that's about $40 million in revenue. The multiple thrown out there may be 6.5. If it was a $60 million business, it could be a 7.5 or an 8. And so you've got to pay attention to growing that business from a revenue standpoint. And then the EBITDA is just the multiple. So, you know, to maximize both, you want to grow the revenue and you also want to maximize the performance in the organization, which therein drives the EBITDA. And so, you know, so the EBITDA really comes from, as everybody knows, to the most part, it's the operational efficiency. And that comes through all aspects of the operation. Every input into the end product in a manufacturing process or any drives that. The strength of that also comes from, and we'll talk about it later, about the culture that drives internally, keeps to drive all those projects, plans, and programs moving to be successful and head towards the goal. And that's where you get your operational efficiencies and you get your performance on an ongoing basis. So in short, got to drive the top line revenue and you got to see the EBITDA performance continue to grow as well too. And that's going to maximize the value and thereby creating the financial rewards for all stakeholders in the business.
I like how you pointed out, Ian, there's a ratio, and it's not revenue plus EBITDA. It's more like revenue times EBITDA. And so both have to be considered for growth, and then you can maximize the market valuation. Love how you phrase that, along with operational efficiency, and we'll definitely be talking more about those things in future episodes. Ian, when you talk about stronger and improved processes, can you shed some insights into what you're referring to with this?
Okay, just talk briefly in parts, small parts of what we're going to talk about in further podcasts. The first one, of course, is revenue growth. And that, of course, as we mentioned, has the impact in both areas. And it can impact EBITDA as well as the revenue growth, which gets your multiple up as well too, because as you increase your revenue, you bring in and you're able to pay attention to some of the other operating parameters. You start to bring in contribution dollars of now going back into the organizations, which means you're going to see increased margins and obviously higher profits. So it's sort of an exponential. As you increase the right revenue that comes in and you pay attention to your cost infrastructure and you don't have to put the same level of cost there to get those incremental lifts, those contribution dollars fall straight to the bottom line. And that's how you will increase your EBITDA. But also, as your revenue is moving through, you're increasing those multiple factors as you go forward. And so contribution dollars are successful measure when you're measuring increased revenue. And at the same time, when you're talking about revenue, you've got to start talking about what your growth is in your core business, what your growth is in your new business, how you measure those, how you follow up on that, what plans do you put in place, how do you track it. You also got to be cognizant of what your churn is in your business. And as well as you got to pay attention to what your margins are in specific accounts and also in certain sectors or industry sectors that you're selling to. And so improving the information that you get there enables you to make better decisions about is this good margin business for me? Is this a sector I want to continue to invest in? Am I too heavily invested in one customer or in a sector? How do I balance my portfolio? and what support do I need to bring to that? So all of that, and you and I have worked on the sales side together in the past, there's a whole bunch of checks and balances and process measurement that does to see how successful you are in increasing your sales revenue. And that's simply by, you must have a strong and robust pipeline that's very, very active and is reported on and measured on a monthly basis. The other is, and this is the operational efficiency of the business. And there's certain things which impact there. You got to have, you know, zero-based manpower planning. You got to have, you know, what are you doing in terms of waste? What's your processes in trying to look at waste and bring those down? And workflows, are they efficient? Are they effective? Your costing and standards, are they up to date? How often do you review them? When you have significant change in your raw materials, are you reflecting that immediately in your costing models? Because that has a big impact on improving your processes, so as you're able to secure business. And in the area of finance and IT, that's where it, the rubber usually always hits the road. And that aligns into the reporting of the right information to measure both for ops and both in terms of costing and also then in terms of selling price. And so your ERP implementation or updating or keeping up to speed with the latest versions is incredibly important. I found historically that a lot of the ERP implementations are driven almost exclusively or like 80-85% by finance. And usually when someone says the ERP is fully implemented, it usually means that the financial reporting is taken care of, or that's the first one that gets done. And that creates a lot of issues in terms of accuracy, and also in terms of, are we getting the right information to the right people who are making the biggest impact, which is usually in the operational side of the equation in terms of their, you know, the standards, their costing. So it almost has to be a group of like people who are committed to giving the right information across all the user platform, rather than being driven solely by certain numbers or numerical data points. So that's very, very important. And a lot of people find that when they put a new ERP system in, the very first thing that they do is say, well, the reports aren't the same as I got from the old system. So can you write the reports to look like this without creating a roadmap or creating a vision of what each department is going to get for the benefits of the new system, and create that vision, send it out, and then align the training to support to achieve that goal, rather than saying, well, I used to get this way, so can you make this system and modify it to get that? It could be counterproductive and counterintuitive to what you expect from the payback from an ERP scenario. So those are just some critical elements that happen. And in all of those, it's all about getting the people involved to be successful in following through on all these processes and tracking them and being trained, etc.
Love what you were talking about there, Ian, with the interdepartmental processes, right? Every department feeds another department and improving the overall process. And part of that is information, like you're talking about. And under all that, getting the improvements, that's where there's some scalable contribution dollars. Also, like what you're talking about with waste management and workflow and costing and standards, those are all very important things to get a grip on early on to start enabling these improvements with process. So wonderfully said, Ian. People's a big deal to you, and I know that. I know people are always a critical element of all of the business transformations you've done through your life. What are the keys to employee knowledge empowerment, Ian? What's some of the secret sauce there?
I think the most important thing is the openness when you start in a process like this. Normally, some of the times when I become involved, it's usually the business is not performing optimally, and everybody knows that, and there's a level of frustration. And that's probably understating the situation. But I think the first thing is what are you going to do to show the people that you're different? And one of the things is, you know, I always, and you've used it as well too, is you can't cut cost your way to greatness. If that's the case, right, you're starting to go down the drain hole so fast. And so at the same time that you're going to pay attention to the processes which are broken and you need to fix them, you got to talk about the the future of the company, and then you've got to show them that there's growth. That gives them a view that the future is going to be better than where it is. And if it's all about cost cutting, then they automatically, are tucking their head between the shoulder blades because everyone's waiting for the sword to swing. On the flip side, you need those people to buy into what's going on, how can we improve that, and then but show them that this is going to create an opportunity for us to grow the business. So when a business grows, and by that I mean the revenue grows and then the EBITDA starts to grow, we talked about the contribution margin effect earlier, all of a sudden that gives people a different view and a different attitude to what's happening in the organization. And so that's where you're going to move to fairly quickly to start getting that information. And at the same time, the first stop has got to be is where is the organization today vis-a-vis its competitors and the marketplace in terms of compensation? So are the people in line with competitors, the marketplace, whether it be regional, whatever, and their skills? And then is there a gradation progression lines in there for people doing functions? In customer service, there's different levels. Are they in place? Are they valid in terms of the step ups and the appropriate percentage gains? Where are they in the range, et cetera? And look at that, look at things like, what's the benefit plan like? What is, bonus payouts? And you've done pretty much every company I've been in, it ends up that every person gets a bonus on a quarterly basis based on the performance, driven by EBITDA, obviously. But those are the things that you look at, and you don't look at what it's going to pay or what you're going to pay. You need to clean up the mess of people that have probably been told certain things hasn't happened, A or B. They're not in the proper ranges. And yes, there's a cost to that. You need to understand what that cost is, but figure out how quickly you're going to be able to recoup that. Secondly is, if I want to get from here to here, you can't do it in one step. You may have to do it in two or three steps. The minute that you come up with that game plan in the first month, you communicate to people, this is how we're going to get there. And then at the same time, you then start talking about the other areas that we're going to work on. The next stop would be in terms of what's the safety program like. and I know we'll probably talk about that later. And the most important about that is that you want to make sure people go home in the same physical and mental state as when they turned up at the door. So you've got to put in together a solid safety program that's meaningful. People understand, they can buy in, because when you have a good safety program, you get the information coming back to you, and people start to buy in. So then after that, you then start to, usually within the first month, my situation, I've already hashed out a plan for revenue growth, identified the operational areas that need work, what we need to do in terms of IT, finance, you know, that kind of stuff as well too, because you know they're the three areas to get the data, have a look at it, see if it makes sense, and say, okay, we got an action plan so you can execute on that. Because when you get to 90 days, you want to be already down the racetrack on a lot of these solutions. And so when you start to get into the operational efficiency, the first thing you look at is waste. First of all, what is the waste? Is it customer paid waste? Is it not? Is the customer paid waste built into the cost system? But more importantly, what's the continuous improvement methodology that's going to be able to support that? And this is where you need the people. So you need to bring in someone who's got the, you know, I have a pretty decent overview of it, but in terms of teaching, leading, training, and educated, there's people that can come in on a consulting basis and educate. Here's the process. Here's the data. What data do we need to get? And then get a cross-functional group of employees in each of the departments, and then they start to work on what they do. Most of the business I've been in is multi-step manufacturing. And so each step is what I call a work group, and that's what we do. So then there's some old terms that are used. Some of them are still valid today. It's called continuous improvement. It's Pareto analysis and then SIPOCing. SIPOCing is all about the process, and we use that methodology to see exactly what the inputs are into the process, what the process is spitting out to downstream, so the customer, the next department, is getting the product per our operational standards, and not like I just banged it through and away you go, and you're going to have to fix it. So each operation then comes under their own recording. They start to record what the issues are. We track all those issues. Then you go into Pareto analysis where, excuse me, you'll take the top two or three items, the biggest ones, and then you put a team together to figure out what we can do or what we need to do in the process flow or what we need to do in terms of raw materials, in terms of maintenance, whatever it is. And that's why I have a cross-functional team, because you need those people in and say, you know, what's the cleanup on presses, for example, on a printing press? How often we got to clean it up so as we can run it, we don't have downtime, we don't have to do extra wash-ups, which is costly, and it reduces the throughput, and in some instances, the qualitative aspects denigrate. So break that down into every single process in the organization. When I say that, it's just not operational. There's other processes through there's logistics, there's raw material processing, there's stuff that's going off in inventory management, control in finance, all those kind of things. What, you know, everything that can get measured and there's a process about, that's what you jump on. And so those are the things. Now you have employees engaged. They're actually understanding. They have a vision for where the organization wants to go, both at a strategic level, but you know, my background, you know, it's I'm comfortable in mapping out a strategy, but also at the same time, I've had such functional responsibilities that the tactics sort of a logic that's going to build in very quickly behind the strategy. That's what you impart. You pass it on. The team can set logical goals. For example, in waste reduction, one example, we used to buy around about, 10 million dollars worth of paper, and our waste was up there. And so we were able to save about $1.8 million to the bottom line $15 million in paper purchases, and we generated a saving of $1.8 million in waste reduction through the process steps. Now that $1.8 million, yes, it meant that we only had to buy, you know, $13.2 million worth of paper for the same volume to produce it. But what we did is now, okay, well, we had the capacity of 15 million, So now let's go back to sell $15 million, but that extra $1.8 million of paper purchases generated into $3.6 million worth of sales. And then, of course, roll on the contribution effects, because that 1.8 is really $0 benefit for us. So, you know, and then you report on that, and then those teams take and lead that, and then they start to work their way through into those. And that happens in all areas. So then everyone's talking the same terminology. They understand there's cost savings are an important line item in the budget. They're not, it's just not, oh, we've reduced what our cost of materials is. Here's our cost of materials, and here's how we intend to get it. And then we measure that as we go through the process. And then if we got to make investment to support that, we can do that. But then the people are recommending that. So they see that they have control over the business. Then you go back to the comp plan. That's going to generate that there's a shared benefit for everybody in there, and you share the wealth. And so, you know, that's the way you start to get employee buy-in, as well as with a robust safety program. People start to see that as a real positive in the organization, because no one wants to get hurt.
I love what you're talking about, and that is a T-shirt waiting to be printed. You can't cost cut your way to greatness. I've heard you say that so many times, but it is so true. Businesses that are just run by accountants and spreadsheets and don't invest in culture or people or process improvement, it's just a matter of time. They're going to disappear into themselves. I love how you framed that, Ian. It's showing the people the road to growth with their involvement and buy-in. I mean, does that ever change attitude in a hurry? Talk about turning on a mindset when you get people bought back into a company that they used to work for. Now it's a whole new company to them. So there's some tremendous examples of what you're talking about there. Safety, and I know safety is a big thing. I know wherever you've gone, because some of these operational manufacturing facilities, there's some risk going on. And you take that very seriously. I know you do. I know you've transitioned a multitude of different businesses, from high-tech consumer goods to manufacturing. When you implement programs that generate safer work environments, what are some of the examples you could share with our listeners today, Ian?
Yeah, I think it's experiential for me. You know, I went from, you know, very early in my career, boy, that's a long time ago. I had hair in those days. went to a plant that did not have a very good safety record at all. So I transitioned from controller for Western Canada into plant manager of a plant, which was a very underperforming plant, had a lot of personnel issues. And so, you know, you've been with me. I spent a lot of time walking the floor. You know, I used to joke a lot. The last place you'll find me, you know, during day and afternoon shifts would be in my office. You best to catch me on the floor. Because you walk around and you observe things and you look at it and you say, look, that doesn't seem right. It's not that, you know, it's the old thing. You know, that's not how you bend to pick something up. It's that it's the guards. Are there guards on the appropriate places on the machines? Are there shields? Is there this? Is it are traffic areas identified as stuff? Are there gates to stop people just walking across? Are there handrails that go walking across conveyors and you have the walking slats in it? You know, those are obvious things that intuitively anybody can pick up. And then as you get used to it, you start to understand and see certain things and listening and people tell it. And then when you do seriously go through the incident reports, and then if there, heaven forbid, there's an accident, then you have an accident. And then there's all that, you know, all that process that you go through and you see it. And then you transfer what you've learned from that piece of equipment to your other pieces of equipment. And so very quickly you do that. But one of the stories I tell it very quickly about, you know, how I became so how safety hit home to me. When I was plant manager, there's a fellow, we'll call him John S. And he was working on a rotary die cutter in the packaging business. It's a solid wooden die with steel rule for it. So you fire the corrugated sheet through it and it cuts it out. So we were cutting out in those days 24 pack Pepsi trays. And so we were running them like about 12 up. So that's a big sheet. So it was about a 66 inch die by 133 inches around a cylinder. So it's a cylinder. And so he went in to change the die. So the machine was open and you unlock it and do that. And it's a two person job. And so he decided that he would go in to speed things up and would started off doing it by himself. Now, when he did it, because of the weight, the die slid. So he had his hand on the dies. So the seal rules, the cutting rules, went and took all the skin off all his fingertips on both hands when he was standing there. And he stepped back and the die fell. And it was on very late on a Friday night. And I got the call. And of course, the first thing is, where is he? And we were really building a strong safety culture. And so everyone was mobilized. Ambulance reports, all that kind of stuff. So I went to the Vancouver hospital in the Burns unit where he was on Saturday morning, and he was there with his fiance, who was the daughter of the plant superintendent, and his future mother-in-law. And so I walked in, and the first thing he looked at, the Burns unit's not a great place to go, as anyone who's been there is, because it's just not a really nice environment. But the first thing he said, Ian, it was 100% my fault. I violated the state. I said, John, I don't care about that. I care about you. And yes, I understand that part of our investigation is how we can reinforce that. What signage do we need? What else do we need to do? What type of clipping devices? I said, how are you doing? And then I got the debrief on that. So eventually, of course, after much treatment and that, he came out. But the devastating impact of that was, yes, he could return to work, and he with gloves and all that kind of stuff. He should have had on steel gloves. Anyway, he was able to return to work. But his hobby, and something that he was very, very good at with his friends, was he was an acoustic guitar player. He could not play the guitar after that event, never, because of the tips of his fingers, etc. Could not play, couldn't put pressure on the strings, et cetera, couldn't rebuild to that sort of stuff. So his love and passion, which he developed over the years, was that it. That incident immediately struck home of the impact outside of work. Yes, someone could get injured at work and come back to work, but what's the impact of that? The family, all that kind of stuff, his friends, the other people in the band, it permeates, so much further. And I've seen incidents where people, those things have gone on. But that, at an early stage in my operational career, really gave me the sense, okay, we got to report every single near miss. We got to do this. We got to do this. And it's like a pyramid. For every 600 near misses, you're going to have, so many medical aids, and so many medical aids are going to give you a lost time accident, and so many lost time accidents is going to give you a death. And that's how that pyramid is. So how you record all that stuff and the recording of that information has to come from the employees. So all these other things that you do, investing in the employees in dollars and cents, having them involved in the operation, in continuous improvement, et cetera, helps you when you get to the safety program, because they're the people that are on the job and they're the ones that you get the trade, you get, your first aid attendants and all that trained. They're the ones that do the reviews, do the accident and incident investigations, do all that stuff, bring it through, make the recommendations, do the job task analysis on all the machines. People from other departments come and do the job task analysis saying, like, that's too much weight for that. We've got to do this, and then they're involved. And so automatically, safety becomes part of all of us, and it becomes documented, and we can put a safety plan in place and then communicate the safety plan to all the employees, And from then, it goes through, you have, you know, safety tours, you know, by a group of people. Then you get into housekeeping. You get into all those things which are part of safety and add tremendous value to safety. But I can't do it. A supervisor can't do it. You know, there's so many things going on, but the groups of employees who own the processes and own the risk, them evaluating it in very, 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 you know, in very, very strong terms. That's probably the best way to look at it, you know, because they know it can impact them. That they're the ones that are going to do it. And that's how you get buy-in. And it starts to help all your other programs because they're used to it. Okay, yeah. Okay, we're taking ownership for this. Okay, we're all in it together. Okay, well, let's get the information and we can have a common discussion. We've got the data, and I know what your thought is on me in regards to data. We have the data, and here's the information, and now we can put processes and procedures and improvements in place. It's validated by the data. Now, the data comes from the old-fashioned Pareto analysis. And that's how, you know, that's pretty much how a lot of stuff goes.
Love what you're talking about, Ian, like safety. Your example of the fellow that lost the skin off of his hands, it didn't just, yeah, sure, he's back at work and can do his job. But what did it do for his life, his family, those things you talked about? Those are huge impacts. So the fact that you focus on those safety improvements, the impact is, sure, safety improves culture as well. It's an upward spiral, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Ian, like safety, we've talked about financial rewards, improved processes. We've talked about the whole cultural people aspect and now safety as well. In our next episode, we will focus on one of the four foundations of business transformation, which are revenue growth, operational efficiency, financial, administrative, and information technology improvements, and of course, enhanced culture. Tune in for our next episode focused on revenue growth later this month. Ian, thank you so much for initial insights and expertise on the whole notion of business transformation today. Thank you sincerely, my friend.
You're welcome. Look forward to talking to you soon.
And thank you all for listening to the Business Transformation Podcast.